Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, I've got Tony Adams, author of A Letter from the Bishop. Tony is a Catholic priest that he feels he was ordained for two reasons: to contradict the damage and misdirection of the homophobic American bishops and to encourage gay priests to come out of the closets. Having been a priest for many years and having spent 4 years in Rome, he is well acquainted with the ways of gay priests, bishops, and cardinals. After retiring from the subsequent 25-year career in community development, he began writing for the GLBT Media and is currently found online on print at SFGN, PuertoRico.com, Pride Magazine, The Mirror. That's enough. He's been with his partner for 28 years. Here's Tony. Yay! Tony, hello.
Hey, Nate. How are you?
Good, good. That was the longest introduction I've ever done.
But goodness.
Well, you wrote it, so I get it. You get it.
And you abridged it.
I did. I abridged everything. Tony, welcome. I've known Tony for several years living here in Fort Lauderdale. He's a journalist, a gadfly about town.
A gadfly?
Gadfly. That's your name now, because I see you everywhere.
Yeah, but that's because I cover stuff for the newspaper.
Okay, sure. That's his cover. Okay. That's where he gets to see all these shirtless guys running around town.
And somebody has to do it.
And eats very, very good food, yeah. and very good liquor that people get donated and stuff for our wonderful
food. Yeah, well,
food.
You drink for free. You don't get paid much for writing for the LGBT media, but...
Do you get paid at all?
Yes, I do. Okay, as a matter of fact, my newspaper is very good. They pay on time.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. That's very important. Listen, yeah. Tony, letter from the bishop. This has been like a fun thing for you for how long? When did you write this?
You know, Nate, I wrote this in... November of 2011, last year. And I have to say, it was a story that I thought had to come out because I was so infuriated at the Catholic bishops and how they were mistreating and misdirecting the church. And I sat down to write it as, you know, one of the things I usually do as an article or as an essay or something. And I thought, gee, this would make a great play. I started in the morning. I had three quarters of it done at the end of the day. The next morning, I wrote the last scene. The whole thing was written in a day and a half. And you know, I had never written a play before. And to me, it was a new experience, but it was heartfelt, as I think people who have seen the play or have read it can tell. They say to me, "You really felt this." And yes, I did. This comes from my experience as a Catholic priest.
Let's go back a little bit on the Catholic priesting. First of all, you don't look like a priest.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure what that means.
I don't know. I just feel like something with a red nose. And...
Well, we always used to tell the Catholic priests at the beach because they were always doing the black socks under their flip-flops. But, you know, funny thing about always identifying a priest, I was coming back from Provincetown last summer, and there was a lady at the bus stop. I was taking the mega bus back from Providence, and she looked at me and said, "You're a priest, aren't you?" And I said, "Oh, my God." I said, "How did you know that?" Well, it turned out she was a nun from the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
God.
She said, I could just tell. So we don't lose it. I suppose there's always a look that we have.
That's
I don't know if it's a bad look or a good look, but hey.
That is funny. I've been told, a total stranger asked me once if I was a dentist. So, same thing. I don't know if I had that, you know, maybe I smelled funny or something. I had that little, the Clorox place.
The scent of Novocaine.
The Eugenol, that little clove smell. Okay, go forget this. Okay, so I'm going to go back a little bit. You're an ordained Catholic priest.
Yes.
Did you know you were gay when you entered the priesthood?
Oh, yes. No, I knew when I was 14, and it was my first year in the seminary. I went as a child at the age of 14 into the seminary. They don't much do that anymore.
Uh-huh.
But I remember I looked around at there were 650 students in the seminary.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God, I think I've come home. And it was my first month there, and I went into the library and looked up the word homosexual, which I had a vague idea that it was something I should understand. And I realized it was me. And one night, alone in my room in the seminary, I forced myself to say the words, "I am a homosexual."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, good, this is done. It's resolved. You know, unfortunately, I can't do an It Gets Better video because it doesn't get any better than living in a seminary with 650 guys, age 14 to 25. And you get the impression that most of them are gay. But, you know, that leads us to the problem is if the Catholic people in the pew really thought that most of their clergy was gay. You know, how would they feel about that?
Correct.
You know, I think their presumption is that, oh, Father gives up sex with women, Father gives up this, Father gives up that, and therefore he is closer to heaven than us. They really don't understand their priests as people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And some of what drives me, as you said in the introduction, is the fact that, you know, little by little you grow into your vocation as a priest, and I always wondered to myself, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't until many years later after I left the active ministry that I realized that nobody had the perspective that I had. Nobody saw the clergy from the inside out. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew how, for instance, could a gay priest or a gay bishop take such a terrible anti-marriage equality stance if they themselves were gay.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of self-respecting man could do that?
Yeah,
And the issue that a lot of people don't understand is that when a gay priest first gets ordained and he says to himself, well, okay, I'm just going to do this, and then he develops a desire for meaningful relationships,
mm-hmm.
and then he moves on and he grows into it, and he says, gee, I can't do this anymore because the teachings of the church are no longer what they're at variance with my own personal life.
Mm-hmm.
What should I do? If a man stays in the ministry after a certain point, keeping his secret,
mm-hmm.
and polishing that secret. And if he is successful in his ministry, as many gay people have been, you get to the point where you cherish that secret and you are proud of it.
Really?
And these guys, they don't want to abandon it. Now they're 40, now they're 50 years old. First of all, you know, they get to the point saying, what am I going to do? How am I going to leave now? Who's going to hire me? How can I have a second career? I'm stuck here.
Right.
And I have been successful. And that's how they go to bed at night, thinking, mm-hmm. this is not really me, but I have done the work of God. I have helped people, and I will buy this double standard, and I will say the words that they want me to say, because the good that I do overrides the insincerity of my life.
But what happens in their daily ministry when a gay child comes to them?
Well, that,
or
know,
a gay man,
you know,
an adult man,
you know,
comes to
before
them.
The LGBT community was visible.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot easier because people would not bring this
That's
to
right.
them. But if an out young person comes to them and says, look, Father, I know you're gay.
Yeah.
I saw you at a bar.
Right.
Or even if just his gaydar goes on.
Right. My gaydar.
That priest is now at a very interesting juncture. He
mm-hmm.
has to either come clean or not.
Right.
And I think that we are, as an American Catholic group right now at
mm-hmm.
that point, it's at the tipping point where we're saying, look, you gay priests and you gay bishops, this, we're not buying this double standard anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're not buying the lie and the insincerity. And incidentally, you gay priests and bishops, we will accept you.
Right.
We're not against the gay anymore.
Right.
It's you guys that haven't grown up. We have grown up faster than you.
So correct.
In the old days, it was the bishop was the shepherd. He
right.
was the teacher. He was the one who led people and helped them be good Catholics. And now we are at a very strange time in the American Catholic Church where the people have to shepherd the shepherds
right.
and bring them into a higher way of being.
But hasn't the Catholic Church kind of responded for this with the American fact by bringing in like Nigerian priests and foreign priests
sure.
in the parishes?
Yeah.
And they felt that was going to be like a...
Well, no. Look, they'll sell it however they want. But the fact is, when the numbers in the Catholic priesthood dropped,
mm-hmm.
you've got an infrastructure that needs to be supported.
Correct.
You have parishes that need to be staffed. You have
sure.
masses that need to be said.
Correct.
So what are you going to do? You're going to go to the third world and you're going to get people who came up
right.
For economic reasons, basically out of hunger,
right.
and joined the church. And it was the social agency that helped them rise up out of poverty.
And medical. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Sure.
And,
sure.
you know, and it's not just a Catholic thing. I mean, if you look back, a lot of people have used the church as an agency
mm-hmm.
for bettering themselves.
Sure. Okay. Oh, exactly.
You know, and
yeah.
God, if the bishops heard me say that, they would say, "How dare you insult our imported priests?" And I'm not insulting them, but let's not sugarcoat it here.
Right, and
it's a way of filling the slot.
Correct. And there's a limit to that. I don't know if they can do that. Isn't there a limit to that?
Well, yeah, but the bigger question is, what happened in America to the priesthood?
Right.
What happened to the gays
right.
who filled those ranks before? You know, when I was ordained in 77, most of the priests were gay. We knew they were
right.
gay. In fact, there's a part in the play where we talk about the degrees of certainty that a priest is gay, and it was rooted that scene in something that actually happened to me when a number of us were sitting around in a rectory one evening and we pulled the directory down from the shelf and we went through all 178 names of the priests in the diocese, and we had like three major degrees of certainty. Number one, that you had heard the priest say, "I am gay,"
yeah,
or you knew he was gay. Number two, you had seen him out at a bar or something and you
true.
Knew he was gay. Or number three was, she's just got to be gay.
Oh, God.
You know, but basically, given the 3 degrees of certainty, we knew for a fact that 75% of the priests in the diocese were gay. And we flipped it and said, okay, well, how many of these guys are straight? And we knew that 10%, 5 or 10%, were probably straight based on the fact that we knew they had girlfriends.
Oh, okay, good.
So, there is also another thing in the priesthood. Some priests are, for lack of a better word, asexual.
Uh-huh.
In other words,
right,
they haven't acted on their sexual fantasies. Instead, they go to the refrigerator, or
right.
they go to the bar, or they go to the casino, or they do other things to sublimate. So those guys don't get counted because of the fact that they're not sexual beings. And maybe it was because they just couldn't deal with their sexuality.
I got it.
Now, and then there's a subset of that who, of course, were jumping the altar boys.
Oh, okay.
These guys were not our friends. We didn't know them. They didn't associate with other gay priests. They were so ill about their sexuality that they would take it out on victims.
Children, yeah.
On children or other people that they could use their authority over.
Right.
Very small percentage of the priesthood, but I used to think to myself, okay, who are those guys? We don't know them. We don't see them out and about.
Uh-huh.
We know they're not coupled. We know they're not having sex with the priest.
Right.
But if you put that picture together, and then you put it into the eyes of the lady who gets her family dressed and cleaned and in the car and to Mass on Sunday, and the basket gets passed and she has to put money in that basket, what if she knew what constitutes the priest who is leading her in her worship and in her prayer, who is there with her family at the time of baptism, at the time of her marriage, at the time of her children's marriage, confirmation, first communion, all the significant sacramental moments of their life, if they knew the truth about the priesthood, you know, and I want them to know it, not to scandalize them, but to drive the issue that we need to get over the sexual immaturity in Catholicism.
Right.
We need to have married priests, we need to have women priests, we need to have straight priests, God forbid.
Right.
We need to have all of them.
Transgender priests?
Of course.
Yeah.
We need the whole schmear.
Sure.
But instead, you know, it was the province of just gay men for many, many decades, if not centuries.
Right.
And I have to say those gay men in large measure screwed it up.
They did.
They did. And the ones that didn't screw it up left.
Right.
Guys like me, you know, and I hate to make it seem as if I was better than them. But I made a decision that I was tired of having sex with guys and just bringing them to the rectory or going out and on a Friday. Yeah, I know you're laughing now, Nate, because Nate has a story to tell.
I'm telling you a very short story. This nice little Jewish Orthodox boy came out of the closet in the 80s and met a young man, hot gentleman about my age, and we had a 4-month affair. He called me a boyfriend. I did not consider him my boyfriend. He was a Catholic priest. He was at the time about to become president of a major Jesuit university in Kansas City. We had a really, really hot sex because we did have sex in the rectory. We did have sex in the confessional. We did have sex on the altar.
I want to go on record as saying I never had sex in the confessional or in the altar.
Okay, and I'm a little more slut than you are. It's okay.
I guess so.
Anyway, the sad ending of the story is I did break things off because I had just come out of the closet and I was kind of acting big gay and proud and was getting involved with the community as a volunteer in the HIV community and also in the equality community in Missouri and Kansas, which was a very fertile ground at the time. And I lost track after the breakup. And 11 years later, on the front page of the Kansas City Star, unfortunately, at the death of Father Tom Savage, he was outed as not only being gay, but also as having AIDS and having died of AIDS. Mm-hmm. The university, the Catholic Church and his family denied it for about 15 minutes and then came out. Yeah. It was a very sad story because here was probably one of those brilliant men. He was Harvard trained, by the way. He went to Harvard before he went into the...
Yeah.
And he was a brilliant, brilliant guy.
Well, you know, Nate, I knew too many priests who died from AIDS, yeah, and some of them were close friends. And yeah, it pained me to see how the information was handled.
Oh.
In your case, it actually came out. But in many cases, it never came out.
All right, we've got to talk about the play.
Okay, we'll talk about the play.
So okay, listen, give us a synopsis of the play, because okay, not everyone has heard the synopsis.
In a letter from the bishop, it's a story of three gay priests who are very good friends. And they're talking one evening about stuff, and they've received this letter from the bishop. This is the first letter, and it goes just to the priests, and it instructs them that they must read a letter from the bishop on Sunday telling Catholics to vote against marriage equality, something that has happened in state after state after state. And it is about one priest who decides he's going to object to that and how it alters the friendship between these three gay priests. And then there's a confrontation between the bishop and the one objecting priest. And then there's the final scene in which you find out, will he or will he not read the letter? And how does each one of these priests deal with the reading of the letter? And I have to say, even when I was writing the scene, the confrontation between this priest and the bishop, it gave me chills.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because I was a little too close to it. But many people who have read the script or saw the first reading here in Fort Lauderdale at the Stonewall National Museum and Archives said that they didn't know. They couldn't tell, will he or won't he do it,
right,
until the last minute. And truth to tell, you know, there have been varied responses to these political interventions on the part of the bishops. And recently in the state of Washington,
mm-hmm,
five parishes said, no, we're not going to publicize that letter.
Right.
And of course, my friend in California, the priest who didn't read it and was removed from ministry, you know,
right,
paid the price for that.
Right.
So, but for the large measure, as I listened to all of this news coming along, I was infuriated because there were so many gay priests I've
right,
known over the years.
Exactly.
And they were reading these letters, and they were taking the anti-marriage equality stance, and I thought, how can you do that?
Right.
You know, I know your story. I kept diaries from those years. I know who they were sleeping with. I know who they had affairs with.
Right.
I knew, you know, it was like, how can you do that and be a self-respecting gay person?
Yeah, I've never really come to terms with even thinking about that until I started speaking with you. But, you know, you take a vow. You feel you've got some sort of an integrity, meaning what's on the outside is on the inside.
Right.
You know, how you act is how you feel. The words of your mouth is
come
out from your heart, and the meditations are real. And then you realize, except for that, and you put that in a little box.
Right. Exactly.
But how do you keep that in the box?
Well, these days, people are saying you can't. Your integrity means that you can't just hide your sexuality and separate that from the rest of it, you know. And I kept thinking to myself, what can I add to this conversation? Because as we all know, there have been many demonstrations and much written about marriage equality. I
sure
think the issues are clear. And now with the president and
sure
the secretary of state and the vice president all saying, hey, look, we're okay with this.
Right. Right.
What can I add to it? I'll tell you what I can add to it. I know the personalities of the priests involved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the bishops instruct Catholics and say, you must listen to us because of two things. God is disclosed through two things, Scripture and in the Catholic tradition, through what they call the magisterium, the teaching authority of the Church.
Magisterium,
I know,
wow.
It's got a wonderful sense.
Is it exciting? Is it a play?
Yeah, well.
Like Disney, does it?
The magisterium is, but the funny thing about the magisterium is, well, who is the magisterium? It's the bishops.
Oh, okay.
So when the bishops tell Catholics, you must listen to us because of the magisterial authority of the Church, what they're
right.
really saying is, listen to me because I know best.
Like a father figure.
Yeah.
Padre.
Yes,
padre.
Yeah. Or like a mother who says to a small child, no, you can't go out without your mittens, and don't question me because I'm the mother.
Right,
well,
right.
The funny thing is, the American Catholic has grown up. They're not little kids anymore.
Right. Of course not.
They're actually mature, smart people who are able to form their consciences and make their decisions.
Right.
And they don't buy that mistreatment anymore.
Sure.
So you know, this is about these priests and how they deal with the
right.
with the authority. You know.
Right.
And you know, a priest does promise obedience to
correct.
His bishop.
Correct. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I promised obedience, and I felt really bad about that when I walked out. I didn't walk out like this guy does,
uh-huh.
or like they're thinking about doing in this
right.
play. But you know, I always felt, gee, maybe I've done something terrifically wrong. But then you say, no. All the while I was in the seminary, I was taught to form my conscience, and I knew that what I was doing was right according to my conscience. And Catholics do that too in America.
Right. Sure.
And they're not going to buy this
right.
nonsense from a bunch of old men who
right.
can't give a single decent reason
no.
for why this should be such an issue for them.
Yeah.
And why they are so obsessed
why
with marriage.
They, why are they so obsessed with it?
Well, first of all, they've mythologized it because they're not getting any.
Oh, okay.
So sex for them is this mystery.
Right.
That, and you know, a lot of these bishops, I don't want to ever imply that they are promiscuous people.
Uh-huh.
I think for the most part, even the gay bishops that I know are celibate men.
Mm-hmm.
They're not having sex. But in their mind, the trade-off for that is that they have the right to then tell people,
oh, not to.
I'm not getting it,
you're
and
not.
Therefore I'm virtuous, and I can prescribe this for all of you.
Gotcha.
You gay men, you can be gay, just like I can be gay, but you can't have sex because I can't have sex either, and that's what Jesus wants. To
oh.
which we say, newsflash, it's not what Jesus wants.
Yeah.
You're no more virtuous because of the fact that you've given up sex for your entire life for some ridiculous misconception.
Right. That humans really shouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, we're not made that way, and we have nothing in the Bible that actually says that Jesus didn't have sex.
No, no, or gay sex.
No, exactly.
Or any kind of sex.
I know.
Actually, Phil Addy, do you know Phil? Phil used to live in Florida. You don't know Phil?
No.
Phil lives in D.C. right now. He's the acting executive director of Catholics for Equality. We'll talk about that. But there are studies that show that that the Catholic Church is moving in that direction.
Yes,
as far as
exactly.
People,
yeah.
The people are moving in that direction. Okay,
great.
Good. All right, so back to your characters. Tell me about the play, and when is it? We got to hear all of it.
It's at its first reading in Fort Lauderdale in February, and its second reading will be at St. Clement's Theater, 423 West 46th Street on June 11th. And St. Clement's, they love they have actual productions, but they made an exception and decided to have a reading of the to permit this reading to be held in their theater because they like the theme of the play.
Good, good.
And I was so honored that they did this, and I'm delighted that they're there. And I have an incredible cast. You know, I'll always love my first cast down here in Fort Lauderdale. I had Ken Averett, who played Father Ed down here, and he is reprising his role in New York, which I'm all excited about. Ken's a real estate professional here, and he's an actor with a lot of experience. And in Fort Lauderdale, I had Philip Brisebois as the bishop, and he's working on having a London production of the play,
wow.
which I'm all excited about. And Tim Rogers, an Episcopal priest down here, played Father John. And Chad Tilburger, who is with SunServe now, played Father Mark. So, and my New York cast, I've got Dean Resch, who is a writer and actor with Gay City News in New York. I also have Will Clark, who had a career as an adult movie actor. who's a delightful man and is a great promoter and impresario in New York, and an actor, Jimmy Moon, who's going to play Father John, and actually is one of my team of writers on Queer New York, and who am I forgetting? Oh, and I'll see Dean Resch, Will Clark, Jimmy Moon, and Ken Averett again as Father Ed in New York. So one night only, and I am told by people that know theater that the reason that you have a reading is to attract producers and theater professionals.
Sure.
That's why you do them on Mondays when the theaters elsewhere are dark.
Smart.
And from what I hear, we will have a lot of theater professionals there, and I'm hoping somebody picks up on it. And it's been a delightful experience to do this play.
And can you give us the website to go to contact you to
yes.
get tickets?
Yes.
The tickets are free.
Yes,
the
they
tickets are.
Are
free, but I'm sure they're going to completely sell out.
Yes, we already have a huge chunk of the theater booked with advanced reservations.
Good.
So you need to go to a letter from the bishop. blogspot.com.
That's correct.
And once you go to that site, you'll get all the updates and the profiles of the cast and information about the theme of the play, and you can click on the link there to make your reservation.
Okay, good. A letter from the bishop.blogspot.com. Okay,
exactly.
Great. Okay, good. We want to make sure people get that. Okay, so Tony, which one of these priests is you?
You know, people have asked me that, and I am not any one of them. I'm a little bit of all of them, I think. I never made the dramatic move that Father Ed makes in confronting his bishop, even
mm-hmm.
though my bishop and I were very good friends, and he was very disappointed when I left.
Mm-hmm.
But I left quietly. I mm-hmm. didn't make a splash. And in those days, I wanted nothing more than to leave it all behind.
Your bishop knew you were gay?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. And because I had been in Rome, and my assumption was that I was going to go back to Rome,
oh, okay.
I didn't want to come out.
Okay.
Because I wanted to take my place back in Rome with all the people that I had gotten to know. I felt that that was the place for me. That was home for me.
Okay. We have a caller at 860. Let's see, is he on? Hey, caller 860-539, you're on.
Hello.
This Hello.
Is Father Tony's bad lamb husband.
This is my husband.
I have been listening, and of course I have to call in. I do want to make a point, though, that's completely not just because I love my husband and I love his play, but I think that if anyone listening, one of the things that I think has been fascinating for me with this play is that, yes, you want to get to the final scene and see the will he or won't he, but for me, I find the first act the most fascinating because it's the one in where the priests are talking like I have seen priests actually talk. And I've come from a background that is not priestly by any means. Tony can fill you in on the fact that I'm not Catholic, but when I hung around with him and his friends, that's the way they talk. And when
really?
You see this play and you say, wow, that was the most, it was very surprising for me to see that this was the way that that people, that so-called men of God, would speak. And so I found it fascinating.
Good. Thank you, Christopher. What is your background?
I grew up as a fundamentalist Baptist.
Whoa, I'm married to one of those. Exactly. We should have a support group.
Oh,
I think every so often he really does want to speak in tongues.
My husband knows the Bible much better than I do.
Oh, really? Uh-oh, that's
dangerous. Well, yeah, because we were meant to, we were taught to memorize it, whereas
oh
you guys
God.
Were just taught to sort of summarize it.
And I never got past the Old Testament. Okay.
Okay, well, I just wanted to call in and say hello. So
hello.
You guys have finished. It's been very, very fun listening to the whole thing.
Oh, good.
You'll have him back in New York in a few weeks. A
couple of weeks.
I can't wait.
We'll send him back, okay? But the
All
view
right.
is really good here. Okay. Okay.
Okay, bye, baby.
Bye, hon.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got like 30 seconds left. Tony, what's next for you in writing?
You know, Nate, I haven't planned it out. This has been such a whirlwind and a good one. I feel so good about this project. Actually, I do have something in mind to tackle for the next theme. And,
okay.
And it has to do with the papacy.
Oh, even better. Okay, we have 10 seconds. Listen, I'm sorry to break you off. Listen, I just want to wish everybody a happy Mother's Day and be grateful that your mother didn't send you to high school with Mitt Romney. Good night from Fort Lauderdale.
Good night.
Whoa. I've been waiting for that all day.